Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
What's up, everybody? I'm back here on the Shuttle Drive. I have a guy that I've looked up to for a long time. This is Joe Poyam, the founder of Dagger Kayaks. This guy, you know, I worked in Harriman, Tennessee, and I worked with this guy in the past, and we also had some Watermark time together. So, Joe, man, how's it going, buddy?
Good, thanks. It's great to see you.
Yeah, man. Yeah, Joe, I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for coming on here, Joe. I'll go ahead and I'll start the questions. I'm just going to do kind of like more like a question and answer with you. I know you're a busy guy here. And where are you from originally, Joe?
Augusta, Georgia.
Augusta, Georgia.
It's a good place to be from.
Well, there you go. I didn't know that. I actually thought you were born and raised in Clemson. Well, I learned something new today.
That's why I think Clemson's where life changed for me for the better. So.
Well, there you go. That's always good when you get life changing for the better. I need more of those. Yeah, so we'll jump right into Dagger. For a lot of listeners that don't know, you were the founder. You and I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, Roy Gwynn, Steve Scarborough, Pete Chet.
That's right.
Yeah, see there? Yeah, I do. Still going. Yeah. Yeah, so the four of you guys decided to start a kayak company, and you called it Dagger Kayaks.
Actually, we decided to start a canoe company.
Let me correct you. It was called Dagger Canoes at first, correct?
That's right.
And there was a fact that there was a rumor that I heard. Where did you come up with the name Dagger? Was it from a Dagger paddles?
Yeah. And the history of the Dagger name being used for paddles goes back to Keith Backlund and Drew Hunter making paddles into the 70s, maybe into the 60s. Then that name was resurrected. Long story there that I'll spare you, resurrected again, wooden paddles in the late 70s.
Was that in Long Creek?
The Ariel Market, which Ariel's a little village between Pickens and Easley.
Wow, well, I did not know that.
Harmony paddles, New Wave paddles, Dagger paddles, all were made there at one point.
I didn't know Harmony was made, but I did hear that the Dagger, So what gave you the idea to call it Dagger Canoes?
Well, I remember we were meeting and talking about, well, what are we going to call this new company we're discussing? And pretty quickly decided we weren't going to name it after any person. We didn't like that idea. Right, name it after a river, blah, blah, blah. We needed every advantage we could get because we had some pretty long odds against us, and we had very little money. One thing that if you don't have money, it's good to have credit. Establishing credit as a new business is not easy. We cheated the system a little bit by using the Dagger name. Steve had been in business as the Dagger Paddle Company.
Okay.
At that point for, I don't know, 5, 6, 10 years, I don't know how long it was, had established a legitimate business, small but legitimate business. And we basically piggybacked on that name for credit references. That's really the reason we called it Dagger.
That was the whole reason. It worked. And those were Dagger wooden paddles, correct?
That's right.
So Steve Scarborough, he manufactured these himself, or he had a factory that does it? Was he outsourcing?
I don't think I would call manufacturer or factory aren't the right words, but yeah, they were made in a old wood shop of Long Creek Academy in Long Creek.
Well, there you go.
Steve made a lot of, he was very hands-on, but it's.
What, who came up with the Dagger logo? Infamous design. Well,
first off, there's no doubt about where it came from. It came from a guy named Mike Womack.
Okay.
Really great guy. My recollection of it, and which is probably wrong, was that it literally showed up in the mail on my desk. We'd been waiting. We didn't use a logo for the first couple of years.
It was just Dagger Canoes.
Just Dagger, and it was a little stylized. I said, no, I don't want a logo until we got the right logo. And then my recollection is like, I open up this envelope, and bam, there it is, from somebody I've never heard of.
He sent it to you?
Well, evidently there's a little bit more to it than that. Tom Windham could tell the whole story. I think they had some back and forth at some point. But basically, Mike came up with it on his own. To me, it was, I was like, that's one of the best logos I've ever seen.
It's nice. It's a, correct me, it's a canoe with the water, the lines of the water, correct?
Canoe, kayak, whatever you call it.
But it's also abstract.
It's also a dagger. And there are some worse rated versions of what it means. But
yeah.
I'm not sure of your audience, so maybe we'll skip that one.
No, I want to hear that. No, especially this audience. I'm going to go ahead. What was your vision when you thought, okay, but first, you worked at Perception Kayak. What were you doing for Perception?
Well, Perception basically evolved out of a group of us that were at Clemson together. And we paddled together and we made boats together. It's so incestuous here. It's just as the kayak business is now, you know.
Yeah.
It's very small. Like, you're a good example of it. You've worked for multiple companies.
Yeah. What did you do at Perception? Was it small? So you were like assembly, rotomold, and was it just everything?
Bill Masters, really the sort of the leader of the group all along. We started off making boats in Bill's backyard. He had a shed that was big enough to store some cloth in and maybe a drum of resin. I can't remember I think it was stored in there. But to lay up boats, we did it all outside, and we had to have good weather to do it. And that evolved into, you know, a little cottage industry. And then he wrote a molded boat, started about 78. So anyhow, I knew Bill. He started rotomolding boats, and I was not around. I was
you. You did something else.
Yeah, I tried being a banker and figured out I was not a banker. And during that time, Perception had established itself as a legitimate business.
Rotomolding.
Yeah, rotomolding. Still small. There were probably 30. When I went back there in 91 or 82, there were maybe 30 employees. Some of whom, you know, Pete Jett ran the manufacturing. He was like VP of manufacturing. I don't know if that's the right title. You probably remember Paul Broussard.
I worked with Paul. Yeah.
Little Hand. There were some good guys there. Came back and took over marketing and sales. And I did that for 5 years.
Yeah. So then the next question would be, okay, you're at Perception. What do you guys do? So it's like you and Pete, what do you say? I think we can do this ourselves.
Well, Pete had left two or three years before I did. At one point, he was president of Hydra Kayaks.
Which, I remember Hydra, Knoxville, Tennessee. Yeah,
not too many people will, but
yeah. Yeah, Dragonfly.
Long come and gone.
And, Dragonfly 2 and Dragonfly, yeah.
I did not quit. In fact, I had other plans when I left Perception. Anyhow, I got offered a job by Blue Hole Canoe Company. I think my employment there lasted about a total of about 4 months.
Where was Blue Hole located, by the way?
Sunbright, Tennessee.
Sunbright, But is that where you learned like how to do the thermoform canoes and Roylex plastic?
What I learned is pretty irrelevant because Roy Gwynn, one of the founders of Blue Hole and one of the earliest people molding Roylex.
So he found Roylex, which was revolutionary, right?
No, Roylex was invented by Uniroyal, which,
the oil
plastics company, part of Uniroyal tires.
Tires, yeah.
Back in the early 70s, and they didn't know what to do with it. And they reached out to a lot of people. Never did find a whole lot of uses for it, but it was really good for making canoes.
Abrasion resistance, yeah.
Yeah, it had a lot of good qualities. They actually started off making canoe hulls themselves, and they made the canoe.
Uniroy made canoes.
They made the canoe hull. Perception, Old Town, Mad River, Blue Hull, all bought what became known as Warsaw Rockets because they were made in Warsaw, Indiana, and they would drive up there with these big trailers and bring all those hulls back, outfit them. You know, everybody had their own outfitting, but it was all the same hull.
Yeah. And oh, wow. Really no technology in the hull or anything. It was probably just a generic canoe shape, right?
It was. It was very.
Because you didn't have actual, like, you know, people that knew how to paddle probably designing it, right?
I think that's true. I was not involved in that, but I think that's a safe statement based on what that design is. That evolved into them everybody making their own equipment to mold it, which was not that sophisticated.
Yeah, it's thermoform. Yeah, just vac-formed ovens. Yeah,
you've seen it. You've done it.
I've worked with Roy doing it, yeah.
Yep, he'd go,
that dude would move 1,000 miles an hour, slapping them damn five scripts down. It would kill me. And I was like 19 years old. He 500 degrees. What gave you the idea? What came up with Harriman, Tennessee? Why that little Midtown? So, yeah.
I had moved to Tennessee to work for Blue Hole. Was falling apart. Pete and Roy and Steve and I had recruited. Steve basically recruited me up to work for Blue Hole. He knew they were failing. That was a big part of his income, was not only making paddles, but he also designed canoes for Blue Hole, and he wasn't getting paid royalties. They owed him royalties. So he thought, well, if I can get Joe up there and they'll get their feet on the ground, maybe I'll get some royalty. It was a mess. So we made an offer to a third of the company, and another gentleman owned two thirds. And we made an offer to the other guy, buy him out, which basically was bail him out of debt, give him a small interest in a new company in the existing company, let him maintain a small interest in Blue Hole. His answer was sort of not no, but hell no.
Oh, really?
And so we said, well, let's start a canoe company ourselves. And I was under a non-compete contract with Perception.
For how long?
2 years. Lawyers told me, you know, $5,000 max that it would cost me to get out of it. But
you asked them if they, can I give you an IOU?
Yeah, that it was unenforceable. But I mean, I felt like that's what I'd agreed to. That's what I'm going to do. Anyhow, so for the first 2 years, we only made canoes.
Because Perception didn't make canoes. So you technically was not violating your non-compete.
Right, right. They were not in the canoe business, and we were. And one of the things that happened that really ticked us off was they were not in the canoe business then, but they hired a canoe designer to design boats to compete against us.
Wow.
To go into the canoe business just to about try to keep us from getting established. And we didn't like that so much.
Well, that's another question I have for you. So the name Response, was that an actual stab at Perception? It was a response to what they were doing with the dancer? That's what someone told me one time. Where did the name Response come up? Your first rodeo kayak, right?
It was. That was the first kayak we did. I have no recollection whatsoever about where that name came from.
It might have just been a meeting. Yeah, one of those random meetings, and they just pulled names
up. The second boat was the Crossfire, and I can tell you almost exactly how that boat was named. We were coming out with our second boat, and the name for it was that we'd come up with was Pirouette. We had logos designed. We had little flyers printed. We ran ads about the Dagger Pirouette.
And, yeah. Oh, wow. I never knew that.
Yeah, and then we got a letter from Perception, from lawyers, I don't remember exactly, saying, you cannot use this name because we have rights to this name. Well, that really was not the case. We could have used the name, but we decided life's too short. It's not worth fighting over. Yeah. Anyhow, I remember I'd been at Rock Island, and I was driving back. This was right about the time Stevie Ray Vaughan was killed. A lot of his music was on the radio. And I heard the song Crossfire, and that's and it's like, that's a good name for a boat.
We'll call there you that go.
So we came out with the Crossfire, and then 3 or 4 months later, Perception came out with the Pirouette.
Yeah, I always wondered where that name Crossfire Response, because I'd heard that it was something. So I might have misinterpreted that it was. So it was actually the Pirouette. That story, I've heard something about what you just told me about them saying you can't use that. And all that. So the Crossfire just came out of your head from a Stevie Ray Vaughan song.
Yeah, from a song. Let's hear the song. Great song, by the way.
Yeah. So then after the Crossfire, I think that was probably close to like close to the Free Fall?
Free Fall might have been the third boat. Yeah, I think it probably was.
And for everyone listening, the Free Fall was one of the revolutionary kind of safety kayaks back in the day from Dagger. You guys put like a wider cockpit. They used to put these little C1 style cockpits on them. The Free Fall went with a wider cockpit. It had a really blunt nose and it had like a peak deck, I think, on it, and very good distributed volume. So it was kind of like ahead of its time.
Yeah, I think, there were sort of two real, some people might challenge me on this, but this is pretty true. There were sort of two real different directions where paddling was going. In Europe, they had big cockpit boats.
Yeah.
And they had big high volume boats. The way they paddled was, and this is a little odd to say because they have all these great slalom racers and you know, incredible paddlers come out of there. You know, recreational paddlers and creekers, you know, they would just bomb down these rivers, you know. Yeah. And I paddled with a lot of these, you know, Germans and Austrians. And
very strong paddlers.
Great paddlers. But, you know, it wasn't so much, you know, catching eddies and, you know, it wasn't much the way we paddle. They would just bomb down. Whereas we were mostly, all, at that point, we're all paddling dancers. But, you know, we're playing and we're zipping in and out of eddies. And, you know, we're in long, pointy boats with little cockpits that are more dangerous. And the free fall, I thought, was really a step boat design. It was much more European, no doubt. Took a lot of influence from there. The Europeans, I think, learned a lot more about our style of paddling over there.
From creek boating and all that.
Bulkhead foot braces and all that, you know, came out of Europe.
Yeah, and for everyone listening, at the time, there was like plastic, or I think Yakima made some rails. It was like there was foot pegs, and they would slide apart like along these tracks. And if you ever pitoned or hit something, it would break your ankles.
I sprained both my ankles really bad on section one of the Chattooga back in...
Just running into a rock problem.
1981. Yeah, it was not... It was a... I forget. I don't know the name of the drop.
Yeah, well, the bulkhead foot brace definitely revolutionized. It's still used today.
The free fall was... I think it was probably our most significant boat. Number one, and real obvious, it was the first boat we ever did in multicolor.
Yeah, so because up to that point, like all the perceptions, and I think it's probably no one was doing it because they were yellow. They would just do straight.
Everything was solid colors. There's no such thing as a multicolor kayak.
You were probably using Crosslink, right?
We were using Crosslink. We showed up at OR... Outdoor Retailer Trade Show.
That used to be a big thing for people listening.
It's huge. And we showed up purple and white, multicolor free fall.
Oh, that was probably a hit.
People were blown away. They were blown
away. Never seen anything like it. Everybody coming over scratching it.
The boat was so different. The color. The other thing, and of course, that cockpit was very significant for the U.S. to go with a keyhole style cockpit with the ability to pull your knees out. By today's standard, that cockpit's kind of small.
But, yeah, exactly.
At the time, you know, everybody had John Mason and all these people hated us because they said, I got to go redesign all these spray skirts. Actually, they liked it because they got to sell a lot.
Yeah, John Mason with Mountain Surf.
They got to sell a lot of new skirts.
Yeah, they have to upsell now.
The other thing, which you can relate to, was that was the first kayak ever, a rotomotor boat, that the cockpit was, the seam was on the side. Up to that point, all kayaks split, the mold split on the top, and you had a left half and a right half. Instead of having a top and a bottom. Now all boats are done that way. You know, it opened up so many new possibilities compared to having a left half and a right half. For example, doing complex multicolors, you know.
Yeah, because that gives you the whole deck lay plastic, exactly. And then you leave it down like that and heat that and get that. So who figured that out? Where did that come out?
The guy that made the mold for us he said, I can make molds for you. We talked about it, and I remember saying, Warren, you really think you can make a kayak mold?
Because he has a casting shop.
No, it wasn't cast. It was hammered aluminum.
And, yeah.
And he said, I said, Warren, you really think you can make this? He says, I don't know, but I sure as shit want to try.
And this was pre-internet, so he couldn't research it. He had to actually probably get on the phone and call people and figure it out, or just figure it out, right?
He was a Kiwi. He was a really clever guy. We bought that oven for $40,000.
And it was a clamshell oven, right?
Yeah, clamshell opens up like this.
Yeah.
And there was nothing with it. It was just the oven. So we first Pete and I went out there, and we heard this oven was for sale. Pete and I go out there. We've never met this man. He said, don't even bother coming if you don't have cash. We flew out there on frequent flyer miles. We didn't have any money at all. We got there, talked a lot. I think he liked us, and we finally came down and says, we want to buy this oven. I'm going to be honest with you. We don't have $40,000. What if we do this? And I don't remember the specifics of it. And I thought, there's no way he's going to buy this. Put on my best sales effort, and sure enough, he took a chance on us. And we brought it back.
So what'd you get the oven for?
$40,000.
With an IOU? What'd you do?
Oh, I think we paid him $5,000 down and financed the rest of it.
And just told him as it gets going. What was he using the oven for?
He was making roto-molded surfboards and windsurfers, sailboards. Yeah.
Well, it went on to make a lot of kayaks. And
it did. And it showed up, and it had fallen through the side of the truck on the way out here.
Oh, wow.
That was the scariest moment in all of Dagger. I mean, we thought we're out
of the future of the company.
We're out of business. And if you remember that oven, the whole time it was used, it had a crunch in it.
It was the one that was in the ground, right?
It was the smallest one. We used it. We moved it to Easley. So anyhow, when we started rotomolding, we were rotomolding in Harriman gravel floored building, which was just
like a hangar,
metal building, no insulation, wooden rafters, gravel floor. So we started rotomolding in there with a winch on a railroad tie up
and that was, you had one mold, the response mold, right?
We had one mold, and we had no cooling fans. We literally brought our fans from home.
Just like an old box fan, huh?
That's what we had. Whatever we had, everybody brought their fans from home. And when a boat would come out of the oven, we would go plug all these individual fans in and start cooling them that way. Pallets in front of the oven. That's why. That's the way you got up access the oven, was just standing on pallets.
Wow.
Think about what happens when a Gaylords of Resin show up and you don't have a forklift and you've got a gravel floor. So we would take sheets of Royalex and move boxes of around on the sheets of Royalex on an engine hoist.
It sounds like you guys are building the pyramids. you're like for people that don't know, a Gaylord of resin, 1,000 pounds, 1,500.
1,000 pounds, yeah.
Yeah. And this was back when you mixed colors, right? You got natural and pigment and you mixed them? No, or was that super linear?
We didn't do that. You wouldn't dare do that with Crosslink. Yeah.
Okay. And Crosslink was very dangerous for your health.
It's not that good for the employees. It's not recyclable. There were a lot of reasons to move away from it.
Yeah.
We took a lot of flack when we did, but
yeah, I mean, it's good plastic, but there's so many advantages to super linear.
Yeah. We could talk for an hour about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So the R&D shop, at the time, so when you first started, I guess it was all Steve Scarborough, right?
Yeah. Originally all the boats were designed in Long Creek.
Did he use CAD or was he?
Yes. Steve was one of the very first people to use a computer to design canoes or kayaks.
And this was like, early like 80s, 90s. Yeah, so computers were probably just garbage back then.
He was using a Commodore computer, which so
people
archaic.
Playing Pong on.
Yeah, exactly. So archaic. And it would run, these things would run all night.
Just to render a file. A 5 meg
to print out the stations, which are the slices through the design that we
and you stack slices up to make a boat.
Well, no, we would space them and then feeder strip over. Yeah, make a feeder
for a prototype.
Well, which would also become the plot. So we can go back to the free fall, for example. Designed the boat. We talked a lot about what we wanted to do, what we wanted to be. Steve designed it. We were in a hurry to get this done. So the only test paddling that was done on that boat was we went to the little park, county park, and we took the boat out, paddled it around. I said, Steve, I like it. I love it. We had just done the crossfire. Fall had, he had a pretty low deck in the back. He had a nice high peak deck in the front. Sort of, you know, he almost had a precursor to a half slice. It was almost
before anyone else was doing it.
Really that low, but I wanted more volume in the stern. I wanted that. I didn't want any way for that stern for water to be coming up, like overloading that stern. So we went back and added an inch and a half, maybe, of depth to the stern, and that's all we did. That was it.
No testing on the next.
The response, though, Chris Spias and I, really great boaters from NOC, got in it. We took it to the dip on the Tuckasegee, the very first place, broke the nose off of it.
Oh, wow. This was a prototype.
Yeah, but, you know, those prototypes became the plug from which the molds were made.
Yeah.
I think they had to redo the response. A lot of them, free fall, for example, we didn't redo. A lot of the boats, all the canoes we did, none of those canoes test on the water until later on. I think that's
it. And so here in the U.S., the only two really like top rotomolded kayaks at the time was the Dancer and the Response, right?
Yeah, the Dancer just dominated the market.
Yeah, they were probably
actually right up just about the time we were, I think we'd already designed the response. Corin Addison had gone to work for Perception. I mean, I wasn't there, so I could be wrong. I think he was primarily responsible, sort of going away from the dancer concept, and I'm sure Alan Stansel worked with him, Corsica, the original Corsica. And I remember Chris Spies. We took the Corsica, and Chris and I powdered it, and Chris said, "Man, if this is our competition, we're gonna kick butt."
This butt sucks. Well, moving on, I guess another one that really stands out is the Dagger Outburst. I guess that was kind of like, that was a Mark Lau thing, right?
No, that was a Chris Spielius boat.
That was all Chris Spielius. That boat.
And by saying his boat, it was a boat that he wanted.
Yeah.
You know, he paddled slalom. Probably at that time, anyhow, was sort of maybe the premier big water paddler in the world. You know,
yeah.
Niagara Gorge and Fudalafu and all those early trips on all those things. And
when we were
good friends. We had paddled a lot together. So.
Yeah, his name is definitely with Dagger from the start, right?
We used him in the very first ads and
going on. Probably the next big standout boat that comes up in everybody's mind is the Dagger RPM.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. If you think about it. And that was probably 95, 96.
It came out in 1996.
And because you got to think, I guess at the time, Dagger had only been molding kayaks for about 5 to 6 years at that point. And that RPM just revolutionized. You know, I mean, ain't it funny still today that RPM is still selling?
It's crazy. Yeah. And how many, you know, people ask me, "Joe, what's your favorite boat of all time?" or whatever. And I'm like, RPM, it put my kids through college.
Yeah. Personally, I wasn't that big of a fan of it. I don't know. I just never really took the RPM. I liked it, but I wanted more. And then I guess because I came around when the Slicey boat started taking off, the Medieval, the Ultrafuge, Centrifuge. And to me, it felt like the RPM was too big.
See, that's where I kind of diverged, you know, and the boats kept getting shorter and shorter, and I was like, man, I want more speed.
Now, you put me in a green boat or something like that, amazing. You know, yeah. I love the long boats. I'll still paddle Slicey boats from time to time, but just a good downriver fast boat, I love it. So, yeah, no, I appreciate it more now. But back then, I was like, give me that cool hip design. It just looked aggressive and cool. Yeah, so, that's awesome because the RPM went on to sell, you know, who knows, millions and millions.
We were making about 8,000 a year of one.
Had two molds of it, right?
We had two molds there. There was also a mold in England.
At Palm?
There was also a mold in Australia.
What made you decide to sell Dagger I'm thinking it was around 98 or 99 to
it was
a company? 98 to a company called Watermark. How did that come down? Were you just tired of doing it or you just wanted out or how did that come about?
A lot of things were going on. Yeah, we were growing rapidly. And
yeah, it was the heyday.
Good things ahead, but there was also risk. Personally guaranteed about $6 million of loans. You know, I had nothing other than Dagger, you know, and if Dagger failed, you know, I was bankrupt.
Yeah, and you guys weren't taking like a big salary, right? Because
no, I think I might have been making $50,000 a year. I can't remember.
And like the owner of a company. Yeah.
Right. I'm the top guy. So no, we were paying ourselves very little. I got kids that have got to get educated. Got a call from a guy saying we're interested in investing or buying your company, and it's like, well, we'll talk to you. It went from there, and so we had a lot of debt. We also had one of our shareholders was needing to buy his shares, or he could sell them to anybody.
Yeah,
so we didn't want that to happen. So we were having not only did we not have money, we're having to come up with money to buy it. You know, and they came and offered, made up a good offer, which ended up being negotiated. The details of which were negotiated for months.
But what a lot of people didn't know, they owned Yakima. So Yakima racks, the rocket boxes were manufactured in Easley. They bought Yakima, Perception, and Dagger, correct? Yeah, and they had it all in that building. And
they bought Church's Fried Chicken, and they bought Caribou Coffee, and they bought Cirrus Aircraft, and they bought
I'm sure the outdoor stuff was about that big for their investments.
Well, but Dagger was their very first investment. That same night, they purchased Perception. they closed the deal on Perception. We were on one floor hammering out the final details, and Bill Masters and his wife were three or four floors down below us. And we weren't sure if the Perception sale was going to happen or not.
So, because at the time, there wasn't many kayak manufacturers in the U.S. So it was really just Dagger, Perception, and Wavesport making whitewater at that time.
There may have been somebody else, but I can't think of who it would have
been. Just the U.S. This was a U.S. market, yeah.
Right. And Piranha was selling boats over here.
And Prion's been around forever.
Yeah.
Was that your ultimate thing you wanted to do with Dagger, get it to a point?
Or we didn't have any long-term plans.
Yeah. It was just you guys just winging it.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
No, absolutely. It was winging it the whole time, and we winged it. We thought we had plans more to satisfy our bankers than anything.
So you sold it, but you stayed in kind of as in a consulting role with Watermark.
I was in charge of all the boat brands and all, even before. Well, for the first couple of years, we kept Perception and Dagger very separated. Noah, I was overseeing what was happening with the perception side of
it. You know, I could, one of them had to give because they were separate and competing at the exact same time.
Yeah, in whitewater, yeah.
I'm only talking whitewater.
Yeah. Right. And then when Shane and Woody and Steve Jordan, Tom Dempsey and all took off and started Liquid Logic, there were no boat designs. There was nothing. I mean, there was Perception fell off the map.
I think they tried. They tried to kind of like do something.
We had
Jeff West.
I brought Rob Kelly in.
Jeff West did a Lucid.
Jeff West, Dave Mullen did a boat. Yeah. You know, but it was just, you know, there was just no, man, I was trying to salvage.
You really did. Yeah.
I really did.
Were you there during the, cause I wasn't there for this. The Confluence came through and bought out, I guess Watermark got out of it and put it up for sale.
I was very involved in that.
This was 2005, correct? And for everybody, you know, Confluence was at the time, I guess it was Wilderness Systems, Wavesport, and Mad River, correct?
Yeah.
It was like those three, maybe something else in there, but the ones that stand out was those three. And then they were in High Point, North Carolina. They had a factory there.
Yeah.
Confluence, I guess, was the owners of that, and
that was Confluence. No, it was owned by private equity. I think they were private group out of Bethesda, Maryland.
Okay. Well, in closing here, how do you feel like looking at it now? I know you don't do like a lot of social media or not, but you kind of see where Dagger is now. Is it not like how do you see Dagger now?
Well, first off, I'll say I've been paddling a
yeah. What's the boat you're paddling right now?
I'm paddling a Rewind
Medium.
Yeah, what a sweet boat.
Is it not a great boat?
I just don't need much else in a boat. You know, I don't do the things in a boat you do, but regardless, I mean, I like some edge. I like zip. I like, you know, I don't want a squishy creek boat, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, for paddling the Chattooga and places Coe like that.
And stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it's just everything I need.
So, well, you guys hear that. The founder of Dagger here. It's bragging on the Rewind on how well that boat is. It's a really well-designed boat.
There are a lot of other good boats out there, I know, and I don't even know the names, you know, but everybody's got a half-slice boat. I mean, before that, I've been paddling the Jackson Anik.
2.0 or 1?
The first version, and I'd wished it was a little longer, and I would have liked it even more. Sure. What did they do? They made it a little longer and fixed a couple issues on it.
The knee issue.
That's a great boat, you know. Yeah. I would, you know, the only thing I don't like about the Rewind and any boat now is they're just so heavy. It's just
carrying rotomolded molded seats, rotomolded molded pillars,
really hard.
Yeah,
it's really hard. I think that's an industry problem. You know, I'm just glad Dagger's still going. There's still, you know, I'm staying in touch with Scott Byers. Snowy's a really good friend that he's still doing the boats. And I'm really thankful that's, you know, Andy Knight and crew are carrying the flag over in Europe and doing a good job over there. The company's 33 years old. The brand's 33 years old now. And we should have had a third of a century party.
Yeah, a third of a century. Well, I could do a party every year, Joe. If you want to party all the time, I'm down. We'll go ahead and wrap this up. But, man, I really appreciate you coming on. You've definitely been one of my – kind of looked up to you throughout the years, and I appreciate what you've done. You know, you and your team there has done to, you know, push paddle sports and Dagger kayaks, and, you know, it's still going strong. So, yeah, man, definitely thanks for that.
Well, and, it was a lot of good people, and yourself included. Look at the team we had and the people that were involved.
It was awesome.
It's amazing. It's no wonder it was successful.
Yeah. This is Joe, and I'm glad he came on. So take it easy, man.
Thanks, Wade.